Reality Church, how you guys doing today? Yeah? Hey, happy Father's Day. Can we get a round of applause for all the fathers in the room? Yeah, you guys are awesome. Hey, so my name is Jacob Sammons. I'm the junior high director here at Reality Church. If this is your first time with us, welcome. We are so glad you chose to be here with us today. We know you could have been a number of different places, but you chose to be here with us, and we are absolutely excited about that. We are honored about that, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your morning. If you're watching online, welcome. We're glad you tuned in. Also hope you enjoy your time with us today. So this week, guys, we are on week 5 of our series, Intentionals 2. And what this series is it's a sequel of a series we did two summers ago called Intentionals, where we're looking at Old Testament characters, people that we view as heroes, and we're kind of looking at how God used them, the way that they lived their life, and how they're actually kind of normal, ordinary people. And throughout this whole series, we're asking this question, what if God intentionally uses our weaknesses to show his strength? And so that's kind of where we're at today. If at any time while I'm speaking up here you got any questions, you can text Reality Church to 22333, or if you have our mobile app, you can go through there, go more, and then it should be the top one, sermon polls and questions. At the end, I'll try and get as many of those answered as I can. So that's where we're at. Guys, I want to talk to you today about gifts. And not the kind that you get on Christmas, not exactly, but the kind that God gives us. And it's funny, as I think about the way that God gifts us, it seems as though his greatest gifts to us are things that we don't readily see as a gift. I'll give you an example. One of the best gifts I ever received from God, it was something I got when I was a little kid. I was an infant. I was about 6 months old. And my biological father had walked out on my mom and I. You see, he had had a mistress. And he decided to leave the family that he had to go start a new one. And as I was growing up, God blessed me with a man, a stepfather, who raised me as if I was his own and taught me all the things that a dad should teach a kid. But I still remember growing up just having this deep pain of like just watching from a distance as the man who was supposed to be here providing for my mother and I, and teaching me how to throw a baseball, and teaching me how to be a man of God, watching from a distance as he poured his whole life into a different family. It hurt, I won't lie, it did. And for a long time, I felt less than, like I wasn't worth as much as the people around me because clearly I wasn't enough for him. And it got me bitter towards him. And for a long time, it was an excuse for me, like a free pass to do whatever I wanted. Because you see, when I was 14, my stepdad who raised me passed away. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to do whatever I want then. Who's going to stop me? You won't. This is my free pass. I don't have a dad. I can do what I want. And over time, my perception on this changed. And I began to view this, his absence, as a gift. And you may be sitting there thinking, well, how is that possibly a gift? Some of you, you know the pain that is, and you're like, there's no way that's a gift. Well, let me explain. You see, God has raised me up now as a minister to junior high kids. And so when a kid comes into my ministry, even if it's not to me directly that he says it to, when he comes in, he says to a small group leader, hey, you know, my parents just got a divorce, or my dad, he's not around, or I don't even know who my dad is. I know what that's like. And I can minister to that kid in a way that I never would have been able to before had I not gone through that pain growing up. See, what had been for a long time for me a free pass, an excuse to do whatever I wanted, to do nothing, has become for me a free pass to make an impact in somebody's life. And some of you, you can relate to that. You can relate to all of it. Some of you, you can only relate to pieces of it. Some of you, you've always had a great family life. And that's fine. That's great. I'm glad that you got that experience. But regardless of your family life, all of us have something that disqualifies us, right? At least in our mind, there's something that we have that it just makes us not good enough. It's that if only statement, that if only this was different about me, like if only I was a little bit smarter, then I could have got into the right school, or if only I had more money, then I could be generous, and oh boy, I would show you generous, right? Or if only I had grown up in a better home situation, or if only I didn't have this disease or this disability or this sin that just weighs me down, then God could really use me to make an impact. Or we all have that thing. And oftentimes, we let whatever perceived deficit we have become for us an excuse, right? A free pass to do nothing. A free pass to just step back and be like, whoa, man, I can't have an impact on that. I can't do that. No, not me. But what if it doesn't have to be that way? What if your greatest perceived weakness is actually your greatest area of giftedness? How would that change things? How could that change things for you, but how could that change things for the people around you? What if your deficit is your giftedness? There was a time in Israel's history where God would raise up judges to deliver Israel from the hands of tyrannical oppressors. Those are two really big words. So basically, it's these really cruel, really mean rulers. And one of the judges that he raised up was a warrior named Ehud. And today we're going to take a look at his story. A lot of people don't know who Ehud is, but hopefully we can change that today. So if you have your Bibles or your devices you want to follow along, I'm going to be in Judges chapter 3 today. I will tell you, I'm going to be summarizing some of this. So you can follow along if you want, but just know that. So Judges 3, the people of Israel had again done what was evil in the sight of God. And they found themselves under the reign of Eglon, the king of the Moabites. And Eglon had enlisted the help of the Ammonites and the Amalekites, two of Israel's rival nations, to overtake the city of Jericho, to make Israel pay tribute to him and rule over them for 18 years. But when the people of Israel cried out to the Lord for help, the Lord again raised up a rescuer to save them. His name was Ehud, son of Gera, a left-handed man from the tribe of Benjamin. The Israelites sent Ehud to deliver their tribute money to King Eglon of Moab. So here's how we meet Ehud. The Israelites are crying out to God, God, help us. God, save us. We've sinned. We're having to slave away under the Moabites. We don't even like Eglon. He's kind of gross, but this is where we're at. Save us. So he sends them Ehud, and it says here he's a left-handed man. And that kind of sounds like a weird random add-on, doesn't it? Like when you meet somebody with a weird dietary habit, and they're like, hi, I'm Jake, I'm a vegetarian. And you're like, I don't care. Why did you tell me that? Go away. Right? That's kind of how this feels, but hold on to it because it's going to be very important here in a minute. So story continues, verse 16. So Ehud made a double-edged dagger that was about a foot long, and he strapped it to his right thigh, keeping it hidden under his clothing. And he brought the tribute money to Eglon, who was very fat. So the way that I read this could just be me, but I read this like, oh, Ehud makes this dagger, straps it to his right thigh, and Eglon's fat. Like, that's all the author wanted to say, really. But also hold on to that, because it's going to be important. But when I think about Eglon, I think about a slightly more human version of Jabba the Hutt. Right? This kind of fat, gross, oppressive, gluttonous guy who's a ruler, I guess. I don't know if he's a king really, but people serve him for who knows why. That's kind of how I see Eglon, except Eglon actually is a king. So that's what Ehud's up against here. And he takes the tribute money to Eglon and he delivers it and he starts back with the people who had helped him carry it. But when they get to the idols at Gilgal, he turns back and he goes to Eglon and he comes to Eglon. And he says, hey, I got a secret message for you. So Eglon sends all his servants out of his room, tells them to be quiet. And what follows is where Ehud delivers on his mission to save Israel. And in my opinion, it's one of the funniest passages in Scripture. So let's check it out. Judges 3:20. Ehud walked over to Eglon, who was sitting alone in a cool upstairs room. It's not his boring upstairs room. This is his cool room where he does his Will Smith impressions and stuff. And Ehud said, I have a message from God for you. As King Eglon rose from his seat, Ehud reached with his left hand, pulled out the dagger strapped to his right thigh, and plunged it into the king's belly. The dagger went so deep that the handle disappeared beneath the king's fat. So Ehud did not pull out the dagger, and the king's bowels emptied. Oh, it gets better, I think. Then Ehud closed and locked the doors of the room and escaped down the latrine. Can I just say, what a crappy way to die? when you're a kid and you're sitting there like with your, I don't know if you guys do this, maybe I'm just weird, but my friends would always be like, yeah, when I die, it's going to be like the coolest thing ever. This is how I want it to go. And I never heard somebody say, oh yeah, well, when I die, I want somebody to stab me in the gut and I'll just poop on them. Like, that's how I'm going to go out. Nobody said that. That's ridiculous. But think about this. I forgot to mention this when I was building up to this, but the dagger that Ehud killed Eglon with, it said that it was about a foot long, but there was a star next to it. And there's a footnote there that it's actually about a cubit long, or about 18 inches. So he loses an 18-inch long dagger in this guy. That's how big this guy is. I don't even think you could lose a 6-inch long blade in me. It's like, oh, look, still got the handle. There it is. But he loses it in this guy. You can make Jake kebabs with this thing, and it's gone. So what does Ehud do? Same thing I would do. He left it there. He's like, yo, Eglon, you could just have it, man. I made it for you. I hope it gives you a real sharp day, you know? Enjoy that. And by the way, I'm out of here. And so he looks around like, how am I going to get out of here? He locked the doors. There's only one other way. So he's like, well, you know, I already got a little poo on me. Might as well dive on in, going down the latrine. Here we go. And so, but Ehud actually escapes, though. And part of the reason why is because Eglon's servants had come back, and they noticed the doors were locked, and no doubt they smelled the poop, and they're like, you know, he's a big dude. You know, he had some day-old Lena's a couple days ago. It's been really giving his stomach fits. Like, he'll be all right. We'll just let him be. He'll come out. We'll let the bathroom rest. Like, it'll be all right. But in some translations, it says, then when they got embarrassed. Like, how long do you have to be on your own toilet before your family and friends start getting like, man, that's embarrassing. What did you eat? And so they go and check on him. And when they check on him, they find him dead. But their delay gave Ehud enough time to go back to the Israelites and lead a band of warriors down the hill in front of Moab. And so we pick up in verse 28. This is Ehud talking to his band of Israelite soldiers. He says, follow me. He said, for the Lord has given you victory over Moab, your enemy. Nope, not ready for that yet. So they did follow him. And they came down across the shallow crossings across from Moab and made sure that nobody could cross either way. And then they attacked the Moabites and killed about 10,000 of their strongest and most able-bodied warriors. Not one of them escaped. So Moab was conquered by Israel that day, and there was a peace in the land for 80 years. And so that's how the story ends. And it's kind of a funny story. It's kind of a stinky story, kind of a gross story. But let's not miss the point here. Eglon sure didn't. So Ehud, when we met him, it was pointed out that he was a left-handed man. Do we have any lefties in the room? Yeah, I see a couple. All right, so if you're left-handed, you know that the being left-handed has some disadvantages, right? Like, just a couple that I could think of is you probably smudge the ink when you write. I don't even know how to do that motion because I'm so right-handed. Or you bump elbows with all the righties next to you when you're eating. There's disadvantages to it. You could probably come up with more if you're left-handed than I could. But for Ehud, being left-handed was a deficit for him. In fact, in this world today, being left-handed, I don't see where it could be much of an advantage unless you were like a pitcher in the major leagues, right? In that case, it's an advantage for you. And in like pitchers in the major leagues, Ehud actually arranged his life around this apparent weakness in a way that it became a strength for him. And so, you see, in Ehud's day, left-handed warriors were elite. Judges 20:16 talks of a band of 700 men, all of them left-handed, who could sling a stone at a hair and not miss. I don't know about you guys, but I can't even do that with my right hand. That's pretty incredible. So being left-handed for these warriors was an advantage. It made them elite. And true, Ehud had to work at this. He had to you know, get this, go through some training and work on this skill. But once he did, his being left-handed put him over the top. It made him elite. And so, and it also gave him a way into Eglon's presence with a dagger. You see, the guards would have assumed he's right-handed. Most people are right-handed. So they're going to check for a blade. They're going to check on his left thigh because that's where he's going to have it. But he's left-handed, so it's over here on his right thigh. So he, what could have been for Ehud, I don't think he'd be this dramatic, but what could have been a free pass to be like, you know what? I just can't do this. Find somebody else. What could have been a free pass for that became for him a free pass, quite literally, to deliver Israel from the hands of an oppressor. Oftentimes, it is our deficits that turn out to be our greatest gifts. Think about that. What is the thing about you that is so unique that's almost a detriment? Or maybe it's not even something that's unique. Maybe it's something that you just see as like a weakness that you have. What is your if-only statement? And what if this is true? What if your deficit is your giftedness? It was for Ehud, and I think it is for us today too. Think of it like this. In leadership, some of the best leaders are people who are introverts, people who need like time away from people are actually the people who are better, the best at leading people. Or writers, right? A lot of people who are good with words are a little bit odd socially. Or people who are not that great at school are really crafty with their hands. Or people who have something like autism are really, really smart in a given subject. And I'm sure you guys can think of other things that illustrate that. But the point is that God has uniquely gifted each of us in a particular way. And a lot of times that gift surfaces or manifests itself in the form of a weakness. So what are we to do with that? Well, I think that's where we can learn from a guy like Ehud. You see, I don't think that anybody in here is called by God to be an assassin. If you are, let me know so I can stay on your good side. But we are all uniquely gifted by God. And if you're a believer in the room, you have been charged by God to bring Jesus into the world around you. Is that not our call as a church, our mission as a church, to bring Christ's reality to the world around us? In Matthew chapter 28, as Jesus is about to ascend to heaven, he leaves his disciples with one last charge. He says, go into the world and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to do all the things that I have commanded you. Basically saying, hey, go and take my reality into your world. Go and teach the people that you're around all the time. Teach them the things that I've taught you. Take the gospel to them. Take everything that I've shown you, take that to them and show it to them as well. Go and take my reality to the world around you. And you may be thinking, okay, well, that's pretty cool. But I wanted to fight a king and be cool like that. Well, that's okay. You know, there aren't any big, oppressive, fat kings in our world. But think about our culture. Think about some of the things in our culture that are oppressive. I can think of a few of them off the top of my head. Human trafficking, racism, domestic violence, drug addiction. There are people in this city that have been victims of human trafficking, maybe even in this room, that are currently victims of human trafficking. There are people maybe even in this room that have or are currently victims of domestic violence, struggling with drug addiction, pornography addiction. And then what about the more subtle oppressor of living life far from God, right? Trying to live life apart from the one who created life. What could be more oppressing than that? That kind of stuff is happening in here, but it's also happening out there. And are we okay with this? Are we okay with that? Because this is stuff that we can use our gifts, our apparent weaknesses, our past experiences. We can use those to help fight this. And I don't know what that looks like for you. Maybe you're a great leader and that just means leading the charge and that. But maybe, and more likely, it means sitting down across from somebody who's going through something hard that you've been through and saying, you know what, man? I've been there. I know what that's like. And this is how I got through it. This is how Jesus helped me through that. And being a beacon of hope for that person. Or maybe for you, it's not a personal experience. Maybe it's just like your if only. It's like, if only I could relate to adults better, then I would be like on my game. But I relate to kids really well. And if that's you, then maybe it's just serving at Reality Kids. You know, they do need help back there. So maybe that's something you could look into. But I don't know what it is for you. But whatever it is, find that way that God has uniquely wired you up to bring his reality to the world and go and do that. I wanted to give you guys a few things before we open it up for questions to help you with this. So number one, identify the gifts God has given you. And why is this important? Well, because if you don't know what your gifts are, how can you use them? But this isn't necessarily what I'm not talking about your strengths per se. Like, I'm not saying go take a strength finder's test. What I'm saying is it could be your strengths, but it could also be your weaknesses. It could be past experiences. How has God uniquely wired you up to bring his reality to the world around you? Find that thing. You can ask people who know you, or number two, you can ask God to use you. This is what it was for me. Ask God to use you. Pray, God, hey, God, here I am. Use me. How do you want to use me today? And I promise you, if you do that, he will use you in ways that you would never imagine before. If you would have told me 5 years ago, Jake, in 5 years, you are going to be on a stage in front of a room full of people preaching. If you would have told me in 5 years, you are going to be a minister to junior high kids, I would have laughed right in your face. It's not where I was going. It's not what I had in mind. It wasn't even close to being on my radar. 5 years ago, I wasn't even a Christian. It wasn't even in my mind. Ask God to use you, and he will, and he will surprise you. And then number three, be baptized. This one feels out of place, doesn't it? A little bit? But it's not. Because some of you have believed in Jesus for a long time. Some of you even know how you're wired up to bring about his reality in this world. Some of you have even asked him to use you, but he may be waiting for you to take this first step of obedience. And if that's you, well, we can take care of that today. Because today is Baptism Sunday. We got everything you need. We got a towel. We got change of clothes. So if that's you, then when I open it up for Q&A, if you want to just grab the card in your seat back in front of you that says, I'm following, and take it out to the information desk, and we can get you on that step today. And then the last one, this is the hard one, go. Go. You see, you can do all of the previous three things. You can be baptized. You can identify the ways God has gifted you. You can even ask him to use you. But if you don't go, then what are you doing? So go. Go and serve. Go and use your apparent weaknesses. Go and use your gifts, your past experiences. Go and use that to impact the world around you. Go and take the gospel into your world. Go and show your neighbors, your friends, the love of Christ. And watch as God does an amazing work, because I promise you, he will. So we're going to open it up for questions, but before I do that, if you are even remotely thinking about baptism today, I want to ask you to, like, or maybe you have questions about it, I want to ask you to go out to the information desk. I see Roger out there waiting for you. He'll talk to you about that. Just go talk to him. Going out there is not a commitment to get baptized. It's just a commitment to go talk to somebody about it. So this would be a good time to do that if that's you. And with that said, let's open it up for questions. You guys can text in any if you haven't already. Why do you think it is necessary that the author of Judges added in the poop details? What was the purpose of that? To make us laugh? Probably. I mean, I laughed a lot. I don't know. But I would guess that, that's a good question, actually. I don't know. But I think it is humorous, and it shows that, you know, God is not opposed to fun. He's not opposed to a little humor, even if it is, like, bathroom humor. Like, it's in the Bible, right? Like, come on. So that's how I'd answer that. Honestly, I don't know, though, but good question. How do I identify my gifts? That's a great question. There's a lot of ways you could go about that. I mean, if you're looking for just your strengths, there's plenty of tests online, but if you're looking for the way that God is uniquely wired up, that might be a good place to start. But also think about some of the things you've been through. Have you been through anything? Like maybe a rough family life growing up, or maybe you went off the deep end when you were in high school or something. Like, what have you been through? Think about that. That might lead you to you know, where your gifts are. It's not necessarily like your gifts per se, but it's like, that's something I can use to glorify God. And you could also ask people around you. People who know you well, they could probably have a good idea of what your gifts are. That's been really helpful for me. So, we got anything else? are all my weaknesses gifts in disguise? What a great question. I'm not sure, but I think so, because when I think of it, one of my biggest, I'll say it like this. So when I was working on this message, I called my mom because I was really having a hard time with something to like say at the beginning. I didn't end up using what she said, but I called her and I was like, hey mom, what is one of my weaknesses that is also a gift? And without even hesitation, bless her heart, she's like, you are stubborn as a mule. And I'm like, gee, thanks, mom. But other people are stubborn, right? And say, no, you take it to a whole new level. Like, okay, that's great to know. But that is a weakness, right? Because people are like, gosh, you're so stubborn. But at the same time, that stubbornness doubles as determination, right? So when you're faced with something that's difficult or whatever, if you've got it in your mind that you're going to get that done, and you're stubborn like me, you're going to get it done. So I would say so. And it's not like, as long as these weaknesses aren't like character flaws, like don't hear me saying like, oh, your pornography addiction is a gift. No, if you work through that, it can become something you can use. But I think like your flaws, yeah, I think they can double. So I hope that answers that question. Why would a strength be manifested as a weakness? That doesn't make sense. Wouldn't God want us to be confident with our gifts? Maybe, but at the same time, I don't know about you guys, but for me, if I'm overly confident in my gifts, you know who gets the glory when I use them? I do. But if it's a weakness that I perceive and it turns out to be something I use for good, I don't get the glory anymore. I thought that was a weakness. That becomes, you know, something where God gets the glory. So I think, you know, maybe he wants us to be confident in our weaknesses, but more likely, I think God is more about him getting glory. So if he gets more glory in our gifts being manifested as weaknesses, then I think he does that, and that's fine. And I think he does that often, too. So I hope that answers that. How do you determine which weaknesses are gifts from God to be explored and which are man-made messes? What a great question. Well, I think that one way that I do it is, you know, my stubbornness, I guess you could say that it's man-made, but it's not really. It's something that I've always had. Even from a little kid, I could tell you many stories of me just being really, really stubborn. So that's more this is weird to say, but kind of a God-given thing, where a man-made mess is like, you know, in high school, I went off the deep end, did a lot of drugs and stuff. That's a man-made mess. Now, that can be used for God's glory, but that is a man-made mess. That's something I did to me, right? That's not something that I was just have always had. So I think man-made messes are more things that you did to you and not things that you've kind of always had. They're not personality traits so much as messes. So, isn't here a difference between a gift and a strength? You seem to be using them interchangeably. Yeah, no, there is a little bit of a difference, and I'm trying to not use them interchangeably. I think when I was saying, it's not necessarily your strengths, because your strengths are where you're strong. But when I'm saying your gifts, I'm saying more of how God has wired you up to bring glory to him. And so, yeah, I think there is a difference between that. And I hope that kind of cleared that up a little bit. I wasn't necessarily talking about like where you're strong at, although we are all strong in things. So, I want to serve in the church, but I have no idea where to start. Any suggestions? What is reality in need of most? What? That's a great question. There's a couple of different places that have a lot of need. I guess it would depend on what is your passion. Are you passionate about kids? Are you passionate about students? Are you passionate about hospitality and making people feel welcome? And then depending on how you answer, that is how I would respond. If you're good with hospitality, though, maybe you're a type of person like me growing up where I love hosting people, but my house was usually a mess. So that's just me being transparent with you. So maybe being on first impressions is a good place for that. Or maybe you had somebody growing up that really poured into you and you want to give that back to somebody, then Reality Kids is a good spot for that. Or maybe you're into older kids, you like serving with older kids and people you can kind of have a conversation with, then junior high or high school both have needs there. So like there's a lot of different places that we can serve, but I think it depends on where are you gifted, how are you wired up. So yeah, that's how I'd answer that. I hope that helped. So guys, this whole idea of using our gifts or our apparent weaknesses for God's glory, it's kind of fun, it's kind of exciting, and when you do it, it's really life-giving. But don't feel like you have to save the world. That's God's job, and he's already taken care of that. Instead, make yourself available to him. Let him use you in the way that he's uniquely wired you up, and choose to see your deficits as your gift. Think about how Reality Church could make an impact on Papillion or on Omaha or even the world if we became a church today where our if-onlys are, if only this wasn't true about me, instead of holding us back, that thing propelled us forward. What if we saw our deficits as our gifts? What if we saw that thing that's our free pass to do nothing as instead a free pass to go and make a significant impact? How could that change things, not just for us in this room, but for those out there, the people that we live near, the people that we work with, the people that we know? How could that change things? Won't you find out with me this week? Will you pray with me? God, I thank you for who you are. I thank you, God, you're so great. I thank you that you paid the price for us, even though we didn't deserve it. I thank you that even though we're not enough, God, you are. And I pray that you would use each and every one of us in here today in a way that glorifies you. God, we love you and praise you. Be with us the rest of the day. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.